Okay, so you've got a few concert dates over the next few months, including a stop in Edmonton on November 11th with Tom Cochran and Trooper. Now, aside from a few tour stops, and this is a bit of an open-ended question, but what else is going on in the life of Sass Jordan these days?
Well, if I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Secret information.
Oh, my goodness. What else is going on in the life of Sass Jordan? Pretty much the same that's going on in everybody else's life. Just day by day, sorting out this extraordinary mess we seem to have gotten ourselves into.
Well, and it's almost to the point where you have to be more specific because there's
messes
on a number of fronts.
Yeah. I know, it's so intense. No, but in all seriousness, sorry, Todd, I can't resist. I love trying to make myself laugh.
And no,
it's
okay.
A terrible problem.
You know what? You got to make yourself laugh first, right? And after that, then you can give to others, right?
Exactly. So I'm working on several projects at the moment. There's three. Two are music related, and one is sort of a spin-off of music. But sadly, the reason I'm not really saying anything is because I am a great believer in talking about things once they are come to fruition, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Because if you start to talk about it before you actually get her done, you tend to scatter the energy, and then that doesn't leave you room to shift gears or to change gears when you're working on it. So,
well, no, I like that because then that kind of sets people up with a little bit of a tease there that your fans will be like, she's got irons in the fire of sorts, right?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, what's the point in being alive if you don't have irons in the fire, right?
Well, you like to be busy too, though. I got the sense. So, you know.
Well, what I really like the most is to be busy doing absolutely nothing
That's fair.
Just being in the moment and present. And really, that's the only way you ever seem to get anything done. Yeah. I know that sounds like a contradiction, but it actually isn't. It's like if you spend all your time thinking about what's coming up or what was, it is incredibly confusing and you never get anything done.
Yeah.
But if you just stay in the now, right now, easy to say, challenging to do. But that's the goal.
Let's go back on you now. I want to take you back and get you to, I know. Well, you knew this was coming at some point here, right? I have to do it. Oh boy. I want you to talk to me a little bit.
Okay.
Again, broad question, but tell me how you got your start in this crazy music business.
I don't remember, Todd. I think basically what happened was I knew, because there is no real quantifiable start. It was just a gradual movement in a very specific focus direction. And I think, I can't say, well, at 8 o'clock on December the 3rd, 1980, I did this, and that's what started the whole thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was just, I knew exactly what I wanted to do, which was to play, write, record, and perform music. And that was the only thing I thought about. I mean, literally the only thing I thought of was in my mind 24/7 was that. And I think it would, you know, when you're entirely focused on something, it just seems to show up. And that's really how it happened.
I'm going to shift on you again. And I was really thrilled to hear this because I am also, and just a sneak peek, I'm also a very big David Bowie fan. You've cited Mr. Bowie as one of your biggest idols. Now, even going so far as touring with his, I think it was his longtime keyboard player, Mike Garson, if that's correct. It was
There were other alumni as well. It was like an all-star alumni band.
Yeah. And what was it called? A Bowie celebration, the David Bowie alumni tour.
Yeah, it was called a Bowie celebration. Yeah. I think because it sounds great when you go ABC.
Well, there you go. See, now I mean, oh my God, what was that like to be involved with something like that? Especially because you're such a huge fan.
So it was really, it was really interesting and quite bizarre because it was yet another example of when you are focused on something, how eventually it shows up in some way or another, you know, because I was so obsessed with all things Bowie when I was a kid, or when I say a kid, you know, a teenager, right? I spent so much energy on, you know, just listening to the music and wanting to be like that and all of this, you know, stuff. And then eventually, 452 years later, I end up being on stage with some of his musicians that he worked with for years.
Wow.
You know, it's like so bizarre. How did that even happen? I can't even tell you. I guess it was just that focus thing. Another example is when I was really young, I used to walk home from school and pretend, God knows why, I have no idea why, Todd, but I would pretend that I was in the Air Force. Go figure. Why? I don't know. So I'd walk really, really straight, and I'd pretend I was like this powerful, you know, colonel in the Air Force. I didn't know how I knew what it was.
Yeah.
Well, cut to 40 years later, am I not an honorary colonel in the RCAF?
Yeah.
So, like, but I'd completely forgotten about that, you know, being that way when I was a little kid, until it happened, and then I'm like, whoa, there's a bit of a buffer of time there, but it still happened. What are the chances? Like, it's so weird. Anyway, there you go. Philosophy 101 with Miss Jordan this morning.
Sometimes it's funny how, you know, what do they say? You can make 50,000 decisions all day, and then all of a sudden life just sort of happens when you least expect it, right? I mean,
that's it, when you stop thinking about it.
Yep, boom, you got it, kid.
That's exactly it.
Something, I don't know if that's the exact phrase, but it's something like that, yeah.
It's bloody close, and it's true. What you just said is absolutely true, because that's what happened.
Yeah. Now, I'm gonna switch over here again to something, or to a band that I really love. Mid-80s or so, you worked with a band out of Montreal called The Box. Now, not a lot of people know that you were in that video for Closer Together. Now, I interviewed Jean-Marc Passapia a few months back or so, and, I mean, he is the loveliest man in the world. Talk to me a little bit about that, I mean, limited time that you had with that band.
What happened was, here we go again, and P.S., yes, he is one of the loveliest people in the world. I adore Jean-Marc, but... what happened was I was watching, it was very early days, I don't know if it was Music Plus, but anyways, I don't even know if that was out yet, but it may or may not have been. However, there was a video, and it was for The Box, and the song was called L'Affaire Zunzi, and I remember watching it with my roommate at the time, Estelle, and I'm like, wow, what a great band. I love this band. What an amazing song. I just love this. And she goes, oh, I know the bass player. He's a friend of mine. I'm like, oh, wow, very cool. And then within 2 weeks, she says to me, by the way, they're looking for a backup vocalist for this tour they're doing. Would you be interested in auditioning at all? I don't know. And I'm like, what? And that's how I ended up singing with The Box. For a couple of years. I think it was a couple of years. I'm not sure either. I don't really... My memory is a little weak on that, you know, on the exact dates.
Yeah.
But it was right before Closer Together came out, I believe, because we did the video. Yes, we did the video for it. But it's not me singing on that. As well, you know, everybody...
Yeah.
The problem is because there's a video of me looking like I'm singing it, but it's not me.
No.
It was Martin Sinclair. That's who it was.
That's right. But I mean, you're in history there, right? So everybody just normally assumes, you know.
Well, there you go. There's the answer to the problems of the world.
I know. All right, now this is, and I'm going to go to an area that you've been probably asked 50 million times. 1988, your first album, Tell Somebody. The success of that album led to a move to L.A. to record Racine in 92. That initial rise to fame, and then the next few years, I mean, that must have been just a whirlwind for you, wasn't it?
It was, you know, you just described it perfectly. It was a whirlwind, and it was chaotic, and I do not really remember much detail unless I'm talking with somebody who was around at that time.
Well, that means it was,
you know, and they go,
time,
do you remember this? Yeah, and I'm like, not really. And then you start to remember it. But yeah, it was madness. And I did you say I tried moved from Montreal to Los Angeles, and that believe it or not was a culture shock for me. I know it sounds insane, but it was just such a completely different way of life.
Yeah.
I know everybody speaks English, but they think differently. It's a West Coast, you know, it's a West Coast mentality, which is completely different from what I grew up in. And I also grew up in a, you know, bilingual type of environment. And there's a lot of bilingual in Los Angeles too, but it's Spanish, you know, which is similar to French, but it ain't French.
No, it's similar, but very different at the same time.
Exactly. So, yeah. So it was a very, very intense time. But, you know, there's a lot of amazing things and a lot of really, really challenging things. Sounds like life, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Now, of course, I have to talk to you. I mean, you're quite well known for your time as the judge on Canadian Idol. I mean, what drew you to that show? And tell me what that experience has been like for you.
The money drew me to the show.
Well, there you go.
And I had the most unanticipated by me incredibly great time on the show. We just basically laughed all day long.
Wow.
The cast and the crew were just, it was a glorious bunch of misfits. And, you know, it was so much fun just going across the country and meeting all these people, you know, these people that populate our country that were, you know, I mean, obviously the kind of people that wanted to be on TV and being singers or what have you, but still it was just a fascinating experience. It really was. But the thing I remember the best, Todd, is just the laughter.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. Yeah.
Well, I can't imagine just, you know, and discovering, you know, that there's so much talent out there, you know, whether it's enough to make it.
I already knew that.
Yeah.
Talent is, everybody has talent.
Yeah.
It's not talent that you need.
Yeah.
It's completely something else.
Yeah.
It's not, yeah. Anyways, yeah, but it was, I really had a blast.
I'm going to get a little bit serious on you here for a moment, and then just one question, and then we will lighten it up after that. In April of this year, you released your latest album called Live in New York 94, which was recorded back in 94 with none other than a very young Taylor Hawkins on drums, who, of course, passed away in March of 2022. Now, as much as you're comfortable, since his death, we've heard so many things about not only how incredible a drummer he was, but also an incredible person. So if you can, just talk to me a little bit about your memories of Taylor.
Taylor was one of my dearest pals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, and he was, as you know, young,
yeah,
really young. He just turned 50.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an extreme shock. And it still is. However, you know, that's life. And I'm just glad that I knew the person and that we made music together and that we laughed together as much as we laughed together, because as you can probably deduce from this conversation, laughter is hugely important to me. And I just feel, when I think of him, besides, you know, the sadness, which I'm hoping is going to get less, you know, there's just this wonderful joy and this love. He was a wonderful human being.
And isn't that always the way, right? Where they say only the good die young,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
You know, the jerks live forever and the...
Yeah, which explains why I'm so...
Well, there you go. So see, you and I are fine. Yeah. Jeez. Okay, so now, finally... and you kind of alluded to this, but I'm gonna try to hit you with it again.
Okay.
What's next for Sass Jordan? Might we see more touring, maybe some new music? Can you give us anything? Little snippet.
All of the above, Todd.
Okay.
All of the above.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's the context I'm leaving out.
I love it. I think it's great. Yeah.
Yes, but I, you know, someone like me, I enjoy doing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of that stuff and more.
Yeah.
And I don't see any reason to stop unless, you know, you die.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Absolutely. So now we know that you are just going to go until you drop.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Right?
And I invite anybody else who's interested in doing stuff like that to come along.
I mean, what are you going to do? Drive a bus, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Hey, nothing wrong with driving buses.
Well, that's true.
As a matter of fact, yeah. We need people who drive buses. Yes, I'm all for everything. Whatever floats your bus.
Yeah.
Whatever floats your boat and whatever you enjoy. Don't waste your time doing stuff you don't love. That's, again, a little out of context because when people hear that, they're like, well, I have to because I have to make a living.
Yep.
Listen, I know exactly what you're talking about, but it's an entirely different conversation. So we're not going to go there right now. And we're done.
Look at that. See?
I'm done.
I kept it under.
Anyway, Todd, thank you for putting up with me. I know I'm a bit of a pain in the ass.
No, not at all. Well, that's why we probably get along because we're both pains in the ass. So. No, you did amazing. Well, and it's been a real thrill to talk to you. I've been a fan since way back in the day, way further back than I'd care to mention for both of us. But yeah.
Who cares? We're the elders. That means we have experience.
It's a number.
Which makes us far more appealing to me. Thank you so much.
All right.